Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's time now to go beyond the headlines. And for the next 2 hours, go where every sports fan wants to go. Behind the scenes and into the practice facilities, locker rooms, coaches' offices, and press boxes to get the info before anyone else. This is the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Good morning, everybody. A happy Monday to you. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We are sponsored by Jiffy Lube. All right, look. I'm trying to walk a line today because the preseason doesn't matter and everybody knows it. Everybody knows that you can go 0-5 or 6 or however many games you play in the preseason and then go win the championship. That is a thing that can happen. But on the other hand, we got to talk about whatever the hell that was yesterday that the Kings did at Golden 1 Center. And this is not to say, again, this does not come from a place of, oh, actually, I think the Kings are bad. That's not this. I have them at 50 plus wins. I think they're comfortably a top six seed. That's still where I stand. But on the other hand, what the hell was that?
Kyle, you know what? I think the problem that everyone has here is that we saw them lose to the Detroit Pistons last year and the Charlotte Hornets and the Washington Wizards and that same bad Blazers team.
Yeah.
Where they didn't show up. And so your instant reaction is to pull back on recent memories of things that you've seen this team do. And I get it. I think there should be at least some concern that they came out and just didn't have any fight in them.
Yeah.
And that they got bullied by, like, realistically a bad team. And, like, some of their principles look like they weren't following. And you know, I think there are some good things that we can pull from it
sure.
as well.
We'll get there.
But when I watch that team, I just keep talking about this. When you're in preseason and you're in training camp and you're missing like three or four rotational pieces that are veterans that your team usually is going up against, it becomes very difficult to actually get a read on what it is that you're going to go up against when you see someone that's not your team. And I think, you know, the first preseason game they faced a Warriors team that was on their second preseason game. So they'd already ramped up and were using more starters. We saw like rotational players going in the third and fourth quarter.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing where you're like, okay, look, we look at the first half and the Kings won the first half.
Yeah.
68-66. Sure. You're fine. Game two, you go against the same Warriors team. I think it was the same basic result
same kind of deal.
In the first half, and you didn't have Malik Monk.
Yeah.
Right? You get to game three, and I think everyone's like, all right, this is a game because the starters are going to play major minutes and all that stuff where you're going to look more legitimate. Mm-hmm. And it just didn't happen. And again, the starters have to be better, but they also, this is their first look at going against other teams with players who mm-hmm. are literally NBA players that, you know, a whole roster full. You can think what you like. I don't have a huge high opinion of DeAndre Ayton as far as like one of the top 10 centers in the league. I don't.
Sure.
But that doesn't change the fact that he's a seasoned NBA veteran at this point.
Former number one pick.
And a huge man that like gets rebounds and mm-hmm. has soft touch around the rim and like put on a performance.
Mm-hmm.
So like, look, I think the physicality level has to crank up, and that's something that we keep hearing about this team for like, but that's the thing we've been hearing about this team for 15 years. So at some point, like, they'll be just fine. They just need a little bit of time.
Yeah, man. And that's kind of what I think was concerning. I think you hit the nail on the head was because they came out flat in so many games last year against bad teams. Ideally, you're ramping up and getting better as the preseason goes on.
Mm-hmm.
Not going, oh, hey, it's Golden State. We're going to be fired up and we're going to go play hard these two games and then have a letdown against Portland. And again, understanding the caveat here is it's preseason. It's just this, the game yesterday was just not super, like you said, there were good things that came out of it. But also, it's hard to not have your antenna go up a little when you go, it's not that they just didn't play great. They just looked sloppy. It was, there were turnovers and they were forcing shots and they were bad shots. They're just playing with this like general malaise. And they got through their first two preseason games and went, all right, we're cooking. Like, get us to the regular season.
Yeah.
And they're bored. But to me, you've not proven anything. You've not reached the point yet that you can be bored. You have to go execute and play at a high level every time out, even in the preseason, even in your meaningless preseason minutes. You got to go play. You got to go play well.
Yeah.
Again, if the shots just aren't going in, that's you know, stuff happens. But I just, the way they approached last night's game was just very, it's off-putting. I didn't like it.
Yeah, and I'm going to point out a couple of, like, small things that I saw that I think were interesting, but when you pull back a little bit and you start looking at how they play into the grand scheme of things, it might point to a much bigger problem. And, you know, so the Kings only scored 85 points last night, right?
Which, yeah, go
that's
ahead.
That's not good, that's right? And of the 85 points, just so people are, they understand, 32 of those came on fast breaks. So let's drop that down to 53 points. And of the fast break points, they shot 15 of 19 on the break. Which, I'm sitting here, I'm watching it, I'm like, hey, look at this. They're finding the outlet pass. Mike Brown talked about it, how his, it can't be every once in a while, he needs his wings to run to the corners, and it's every single moment, every single time down the court, I need you to run, and like, hey, it's working, right? But here's the problem. If we look at their 35 for 84 shooting on the night, and then we take away that 15 of 19 on fast break shots, that puts it at 20 of 65 from the field, which means that their offense isn't working right now. That things aren't working right now in the half court.
Sure.
So there's some problems that they need to figure out. There is some continuity issues here. We do see them go 5 of 28 from 3. They shot 18%. They haven't shot the ball well from 3 at all throughout the preseason. And not only that, they haven't shot nearly enough threes, which is a whole other problem. And so I think that there should be some slight concern about just like, hey, how is this thing functioning right now? And how much can you disguise what the inadequacies of the roster are right now with smoke and mirrors?
Yeah.
And I don't mean like they need to change the roster. I mean like inadequacies of what's happening on the court. Like they aren't playing well. And it's been disguised by some of these things like fast break points. And sure, this team might get a bunch of fast break points on this season, but they also might not. There might be a way in which teams slow down their break because that always happens. And what I don't want to see is a whole bunch of cherry picking going on, and that's it. That's
it
all you got.
It can't be your offense.
That's all you got.
Yeah.
So
Did you get the idea that yesterday was a something on offense isn't working? Because I've been saying since DeMar DeRozan signed that I thought it might be slow going through the first, I don't know, couple of weeks while they figure out, okay, how does he fit into this offense that we've been running for 2 years? How exactly does this guy who's pretty ball dominant, has been doing it for a long time, how does he fit into this scheme? So I always thought there was going to be a little bit of a slow start offensively. But yesterday didn't feel to me like, man, Portland was grinding tape on this Kings offense and they're just shutting stuff down. It just looked like lazy.
Yeah.
Like they just looked they looked bored and careless. And that is more concerning to me than the Blazers were shutting the faucet off on XYZ actions.
Yeah.
I don't know what your thoughts on that were, but
yeah, okay. So here's how I would kind of approach that: the Kings are not rolling out their entire playbook.
Yeah,
they're just not going to do it during preseason.
Yeah,
because not only do you have like the Kings have another preseason game on Wednesday, another one on Friday. I think I think that's the way it rolls out, and then they don't play for a week.
Tuesday, Thursday.
Is it Tuesday? Okay, Tuesday, Thursday, and then they don't play until the opener on the 24th. So you're probably right. Like the way I look at this is like they're going to play a little bit of their stuff, but not a ton of it. And it's possible that like Portland might just have like a design. Their defense might work well against like a flow offense. There's possibility of that. I thought it was interesting too. I felt like they were in a zone a lot of the time. I don't even think they were switching as much as it felt like they were in a zone for a good portion of the, like with the starters on the court. So it felt like they're sort of testing some things out. And that's what preseason's about.
Mike Brown, not a big zone guy.
No, he's not. He hates his zone. But you've got to run it because so many teams are running zones at this point. And not only that, but you need to run it so you need to practice it so your team actually practices against a zone.
Yeah.
You know, so there are some things that they're working through. But overall, like, look, I don't think we're going to see this starting group go 2 of 16 from 3 very often.
Probably not.
And, you know, they did not look great. The only thing that they had going was a fast break. And that's a good thing because I think this team does have a ton of potential as a break team. But it can't just all be about that. Kind of weird.
Yeah, what was it, 27 turnovers?
Oh, yeah, 27 turnovers led to 33 points. Yeah, I mean, you can't win a game like that.
That's the kind of thing. 27 turnovers, 26 fouls. That's the kind of thing that I look at and go, all right, that's the thing I'm circling and seeing. I'm just filing that away because if that's the issue again in Utah or in LA in their final two preseason games, then that's something I'm going to be watching for in the regular season because that's just, I mean, every sport, it's turnovers and fouls, turnovers and penalties. In the NFL, we always joke about that. What's the key to the game? Well, you got to keep the penalties down and you got to win the turnover battle.
Yeah.
That's something I'll be watching for, especially early in the year. Like it's every team defending without fouling, not turning the ball over, and they didn't do either of those things yesterday.
Yeah. So. And so my first key when I wrote my six quick thoughts last night was that it was sloppy. Whether they were turning the ball over with 27 times or fouling at will, the Kings looked a step slow. I mean, that's like literally what I wrote. Like,
yeah,
I agree with you, but I also know, and this is why I don't stress out about this.
Sure.
That De'Aaron Fox is never again in his career, ever again, going to have 5 personal fouls in the first half. Like, that's not going to happen. And
right.
So,
if for no other reason, they wouldn't play him if he had 3.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So my point is, like, whatever we watched was not truly a representative, like, it wasn't representative of anything that we've seen throughout people's careers here. So I just think that they've got work to do. But I do believe that it was a really good thing that Jordan McLaughlin was not only able to, you know, show up and play, but looked really good. Goes, you know, plays almost 19 minutes and goes 2 of 3 from 3 and 4 of 6 from the field. I thought he looked highly competent.
Yeah, really active defensively.
Yeah,
too.
Active defensively. And he's a guy who's one of the league leaders in deflections. So that's a good thing. The other good thing is that not only did Kevin Huerter get cleared on Friday to resume, to go back to full contact, but Kevin Huerter was in warmups and I talked to him for a second in the locker room. He looks great. He looks ready. And so you've got a couple of days here where I don't think he's going to get on the court and play either Tuesday or Thursday. There's a possibility he might be able to play on Thursday, but he still needs to get 1v1, 2v2. Maybe he did some 1v1 work yesterday or 2v2, and then he's starting his buildup. But, like, look, he's chomping at the bit to get back out on the court. Yeah. And so, like, reinforcements are just around the corner, and this team is going to have almost a full week with some of these guys that will be back. I think the one guy that I don't think we know when he'll be around is Trey. But again, we're approaching the 3-week mark for Trey Lyles as well. I think Friday is 3 weeks from when they said he'd be reevaluated. And like, I haven't seen him to talk to him to say, hey, where are you at? But like the pieces are coming together. They're like they're going to be back whole like sooner rather than later.
He's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We're the insider sponsored by Jiffy Lube. Johnny Do It in the Chatty House says they lost 4 out of 5 games in preseason last season. They'll be all right. Preseason means nothing. That to me though, like last season wasn't great. I would hope that the season doesn't go the same as last season, but
the year before they lost their first 4 regular season games, right. And then went on to win 48.
Yeah.
So like you won 48 out of your final 78. That's pretty good.
It's just to circle this back again, just reacting, not overreacting. They could go beat the hell out of the Jazz and the Clippers and we'll be sitting here going, oh wow, look, they woke up. That game was what they needed against the Blazers to kickstart them right before going into the regular season. Good timing. But at the same time, if they were kicking the hell out of everybody, I think the reaction would be the same. There would be a more positive spin on it, but it would also be like, it's preseason.
Yeah, totally.
It's all none of this. This is all warm-ups. This is all practice.
Well,
ostensibly.
That and Kyle, we keep hearing it's something you always hear, like, oh, the guys are just ready to hit somebody else, right? Mm-hmm. They're ready to hit somebody else. And the fact is that when you have a group of young players that are all trying to make a squad, the last thing they want to do is be known as the guy who did something silly that took out DeMar DeRozan in a training camp practice. So, like, while you are getting physicality at practice, you're not getting the physicality that you're going to face when you're going up against a different team. And you're not going to get the physicality that you're going to get when you're going up against seasoned veterans who know how to be physical in preseason and in training camp without hurting anybody.
Yeah, right.
And so I think you just have this reality that this team needs to play against this competition. They need to play against Golden State.
That's what preseason games are for.
It is. It's
for
totally
working
is.
This stuff out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm not, like I said, reacting, not overreacting.
Yeah.
We'll get back. You mentioned Jordan McLaughlin. I want to talk about him and some other stuff from the preseason a little bit later on. I would like to also, while we're here, launch whoever was responsible for putting Bengals Giants on Sunday Night Football into the sun. Doesn't even need to be the middle of the sun, just the general vicinity of the sun.
Mm-hmm.
That was awful. I had such a bad time watching that football game last night. I was watching baseball. I was watching the Dodgers-Mets game. I was flipping back and forth, and the Dodgers had gone ahead. I think it was 4-0. And I went, I'm just going to lock into the football game now. I think this one's over. The Dodgers are pitching really well right now. Jack Flaherty's locked in. I don't think the Mets are winning this game. I'll check back in if they make it a game. They never did. So I was dialed into the football game, and boy, that was a tough watch. That was a really tough watch.
Kyle.
How was that? I don't know the exact flex rules. How was that not flexed out 2 weeks ago?
Exactly. I don't know why it wasn't flexed out. And I'll tell you, man, we added that extra layer. We had to pick up a quarterback because Mahomes was on his bye. And so we looked at everybody and we're like, okay, at the last second, let's go Daniel Jones. Like, when you're choosing between, like...
So you had a rooting interest in the game last
night. I did have a rooting interest.
That's
which
even
was,
worse,
it was so
dude.
Disgusting to watch. And just, like, every time they pan to him, his eyes are so big, like, hey, man,
You just don't like Daniel Jones's face.
Like, do you have
you
any
have
idea
with
what
him
you're
physically.
Doing? Well, I also have a problem with the fact that he can't hit, like, a 12-yard out.
Yeah.
Like, that guy...
Not
like,
a great player.
For whatever, like, big arm he has, it doesn't matter. It's not functional at all.
No,
like,
not a great player.
Big deal. You can throw the ball 65, 70 yards in the air, but functionally, you can't hit a receiver in stride on and out, and you can't even read anything. Like, everything was a check down.
Yeah, Ramsey said no flex until week 11. I knew it was later in the season, but change that.
Yeah, change that
rule immediately.
Over. Yeah.
Dude, it just, and it, I think it's, I don't want to use the word triggering. That's intense. I think the reason I react so strongly to it is because the Giants remind me of so many 49ers teams I watched growing up, where, in theory, the talent is like, hey, man, all right, Malik Nabers, when he's healthy, is there. And Jalin Hyatt may or may not be that good of a player, but he was an early draft pick from last year. And And defensively, they've been really good. I think they lead the NFL in sacks. Like defensively, you see the pieces and like, man, yeah. it's kind of there. And then they're just not good. And their offense was boring. Tyrone Tracy can play a little bit, which was fun.
That was fun.
But there were no points last night that I thought the Bengals were going to lose that game. Because I didn't trust the Giants to punch the ball into the end zone.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they hadn't scored at home in like 33 quarters or something. Something crazy, stupid, like a huge amount. Maybe it wasn't that many, but they ran this stat, and it's like they haven't scored an offensive touchdown in like weeks and weeks. You're like, what is wrong with you? Like, and just a play call. Like every single time they keep going for it on fourth and two, and every single time they drop back, I thought, all you have is like a 1 yard play. That's all you have diagrammed is a bunch of 1 yard plays hoping that you can get that extra yard.
Yes.
Every fourth and two, there was not a 7 yard gain.
Nope.
There was not a 12 yard pass.
Nope.
It was either you were getting 1 yard or you weren't getting the
ridiculous.
It was so bad. And they're like, oh, the coach is so bold. It's like, so bold? Are you kidding me? No, he's so bad. Like, the whole thing is bad.
I respect the process of going for it.
Yeah.
There are most times, fourth and two, anything from, like, my own 45 on, if you feel good about your defense, great, go for it. But like you said, it's not, this is one of my issues with Kyle Shanahan for a long time. He's been better at it lately, but fourth and one, and they do a weird, like, direct snap to Kyle Juszczyk. Or a direct shotgun snap to Jerick McKinnon.
Yeah.
It's like, what is this? This is your best play? You're going, hey, fourth and two, we need this. Let's run our best play. And the problem with the Giants, with the 49ers, it's a frustration because it's like, hey, you got better plays than that.
Mm-hmm.
With the Giants, it's a frustration because I don't know that they do. I don't know if they have better plays than whatever it is they're doing right now.
You know, Kyle, I don't typically like Daniel Jones as a quarterback. I don't know Daniel Jones. He might be like a perfectly terrific dude. But as a quarterback, I've always felt like he's incompetent.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, but I also feel like anytime he takes off running, it's like someone's running down the field with a bobblehead and it's just like his whole head is shaking and that somebody's about to light him up.
Why do you fixate on that?
Because he gets lit up on the run more than anyone I've ever seen.
Hmm.
Like, he runs straight up and down, and when he can't slide fast enough, and he gets just knocked silly all the time. And so, but last night, I'm watching, and I'm like, all of these fourth downs, not one single rollout where you have a 6'5" guy who might be able to just fall down and get you 2 yards. I mean, there was one game, who was a running back that scored in the afternoon games, took off from the 5 yard line, stretched the ball out, and is diving from the 5 yard line and scored a touchdown.
Najee Harris?
It probably
against
was
the Raiders?
Najee Harris against the Raiders.
Well, he may or may not have fumbled.
Well, when the ball like crosses the goal line, and then as soon as he touches down, it fumbles. He dove 15 feet. And you can't get Daniel Jones to fall forward just to his 6'5", fall forward and get 2 yards for a first down? No. I mean, like, the whole play design, everything, it was just the most boring, ridiculously lame football watch of all time.
Yes. The New York Giants are the NFL's version of the Lakers. And I mean that in that every year the schedule comes out, and every year the Giants have a gang of primetime games, and every year they stink, and they're just going to be there. They're going to be there in primetime. They're going to keep rolling them out. I'm sure there's a Cowboys-Giants primetime game in here somewhere that's just going to be a disaster. It's never good. I've never once, at least not any time recently, watched a Giants primetime game and been like, hell yeah, I'm super glad that game was on right now.
Well, I think we're going to see the same exact thing tonight when the New York Jets are playing.
Ooh.
And once again, we get stuck watching a horrible football team, a not good football team that already fired their head coach.
Mm-hmm.
And we got to watch it because number one, it's New York. And number two, like, Aaron Rodgers is there. We got to watch him. No, we don't.
We don't at all.
None of us want to watch it. Like, flex in a better game.
The worst thing that could have happened was the Giants winning that playoff game a couple years ago.
Oh, yeah.
They went on the road. They beat Kirk Cousins and the Vikings in Minnesota. They signed Daniel Jones to that fat contract. It was like, watch out, Brian Daboll, coach of the year. Watch out for the Giants. And it turns out they're bad. Everybody knew that going into this year. Why are they in primetime ever?
Ever.
You're not going to put the Carolina Panthers in primetime, right?
Mm.
Like, that, no. That's it, right. No. So, but the Giants get treated because they're New York. They're well, gonna get they're gonna get that primetime treatment, and that's just kind of what it's gonna be. I just sure wish they would stop. That'd be so nice.
And I want to extend like a deep apology to the good people of England who get stuck watching the Jacksonville Jaguars. Like, I think there has to be at this point a whole bunch of Jags fans in London, because it's always the Jags who play in London. And the fact that we have made those people, those poor people, watch Blake Bortles and now Trevor Lawrence,
yeah,
and just the worst of the worst quarterback play of all time, every single time they get all excited for a game, and you get some bum who can't do anything, and you're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is how you're representing the NFL in England.
That's one of the difficulties here. Did you know the Jags are playing in England again next week?
Of course they are.
They are staying there.
Yeah, of course they are.
And maybe they did some testing and the Jags were the team that everybody wanted to see.
Or something.
Or is it, yeah, I have no idea why they picked them.
Yeah.
But at the same time, from what I understand, the NFL's popularity is growing quite a bit over there.
Yeah.
And it's not just because of the Jaguars. When teams go over there, the league goes over there, they do a whole, like, blowout celebration. There's like watch parties and all this other stuff.
Yeah.
But if you're trying to endear yourself internationally, like Packers Eagles in Brazil, that's a good game.
Mm-hmm.
That's a fun game that will endear your league to that country or city or place, the market that you're trying to break into.
Yep.
But at the same time, I get why they don't want to go, oh, Chiefs Bills, we're gonna drop that in London because they don't want that. They don't want Chiefs Bills at 6:30 a.m. Pacific time.
Yeah,
they're in a really tough spot where you don't want to drop a great game over there because there's all sorts of added difficulties and you might mar what could be a great game by the fact they're traveling internationally. But at the same time, your solution is just the Jags
every time. It's so bad.
Jags Bears, Jags Patriots. Jags Patriots next week.
Oh. Oh no. Yeah. I mean, at least they got to see Bears. I mean, Caleb Williams.
Caleb Williams was awesome yesterday.
Yeah.
He was really good.
He was phenomenal, but man.
I said they should bench Caleb Williams so he wouldn't have to live behind that offensive line, and Caleb Williams said bet and started playing great. So.
Oh yeah. No, I'm with you. I was there with you.
Good for him. Okay, in fact, you know what? Let's run through. I learned a lot about the NFL yesterday. Got to sit and watch just all day. I didn't have to work, which was great. Learned a lot about the NFL yesterday. Have some observations. We'll roll through those. We'll get to week 6 of the NFL. Of course, we got to talk about the Raiders' loss to the Steelers. We'll have more Kings preseason coming up for you. He's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We're the Insiders, and we are sponsored by Jiffy Lube here on ESPN 1320 at Sacramento Sports Center.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
For the past 3 seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a 4th season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen. Brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
That question you read from friend of the program, Brett Huff, we should talk about that later.
Yeah, we should.
Write that down. Jot that down.
All right.
Week 6 of the NFL. Learned a lot this week. We'll get back to Kings preseason and that question that friend of the program, Brett Huff, asked regarding the Kings. We'll get to that for sure. Week 6 in the NFL. So we had some games that directly impacted the 49ers a little bit, and that was the Cardinals-Packers game, because by the Cardinals losing, San Francisco now stays technically in first place in the NFC West by way of the head-to-head tiebreaker over the Seattle Seahawks. Not exactly where you want to be at this point. 3-3 and in the lead in your division by way of tiebreaker. But given the alternative of 2-4 and way third place in the division, okay spot. Not a bad spot.
Yeah, they're looking much better.
Green Bay looks great. Green Bay looks dangerous, dude.
I see. I think that's the problem the Niners have, is that they're not there yet.
No.
You can see them kind of like trying to figure it out, and yes, they have a bunch of injuries and are trying to get everything going. But
sure,
then you have teams like Green Bay who you're like, uh-oh, that team's a problem.
The entire NFC North is cooking right now.
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
Like Detroit looks great. Detroit was in the NFC title game last year and may or may not be the best team in that division, because the Vikings have looked great. Green Bay, I thought, looked really good last week. Green Bay had the feel because Jordan Love was out for those couple of weeks and Malik Willis started. Green Bay had the feel to me with Jordan Love this weekend of a team that like figured it out. They hit their stride this weekend. You know, we talk about the first few weeks and the lack of preseason and teams taking a while to get up to speed.
Mm-hmm.
The Packers to me this weekend, and you're going to see a theme here, the Packers to me kind of got up to speed this weekend. That game wasn't close. They kicked the hell out of Arizona.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
They looked really, really good. The entire NFC North has the top 4 point differentials in the league.
That's wild. That's wild.
That is an insane, insane thing.
The other stat that I love from the weekend was when I sent you that the Cowboys have trailed by 15 plus at half in 4 straight games. And they haven't lost,
dude,
all of those.
No.
But every game, that's where you're...
There's down a couple of touchdowns at halftime?
That's wild. Yeah, I'd say the NFC North, it's not just that they have these crazy point differentials. They're all playing really well. They're fun to watch. Mm-hmm. Like, again, Caleb Williams, we saw it early in the season where you're like, okay, he's a hot mess, but the throws he makes on occasion are just stunning. He made a throw to Kmet where he's rolling out and you think he's just going to step out of bounds, and then he flings the ball backwards about 15 yards on a line and the dude rambles for a touchdown. Just
insane playmaking.
So incredible. And you're looking to him and Daniels and like all these rookie quarterbacks that are just, this is a great crop.
Drake May didn't suck yesterday.
Even Bo Nix wasn't that bad. Like,
I want to talk about Bo Nix in a little bit.
Oh no.
I'm
you're out.
No. I wanna, here, let's just do it right now. We're gonna skip ahead here. Where's that game? Chargers Broncos. Chargers won 23-16. It wasn't really that close though. I was out on Bo Nix, right? I was out on Bo Nix. And I'm waffling now.
Mm.
Yeah, because I think I get caught up in trying to be introspective here. I think I get caught up in needing to have a take first.
Okay.
In fact, I know I do. And that's part of the gig, right? That's part of I'm in here every single day talking about stuff. If everything I ever said was, or everything I ever thought was, yeah, let's wait and see.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes that's not the game. That's not what we're doing. So, but Bo Nix, legitimately, it was like, ew. Watching him his first few weeks, I was like, I'm out. This guy, eh. But then you watch him against the Chargers, and it's not that he's been great. It's not that, oh my gosh, Bo Nix turned a corner. What a player. But you're just kind of starting to see it a little bit. You're starting to see the I still think he checks it down too much. I still think he has a long ways to go.
Too conservative.
Yeah. But it wouldn't surprise me if that's what Sean Payton is just trying to get through his head right now. Is take the easy throw, take the check down, take it. If there's nothing to, just take the check down. Don't turn it over, take the check down.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't surprise me if that's a coaching point, but you just kind of see there's a command of the game I think he has where should he be starting right now? Probably not.
Yeah.
But these reps are also super valuable. So if they can keep from damaging him completely, I think there's still a possibility that Bo Nix is at least a decent quarterback.
Yeah. So here's how I'll look at it. When I watched him early in the season, I thought, okay, at least he looks like he does understand what's happening and he can take off running,
mm-hmm.
right? He's very athletic and you're like, okay, this, at least it's not horrible.
Mm-hmm.
But then I watched the Saints game this weekend and is it Spencer Rattler?
Yeah.
He gets to watch the first 5 weeks of the season as like what he fell to the fifth round, right?
Mm-hmm.
He was supposed to be a day two pick, like second, third round pick, and he falls all the way to the fifth round.
He was a huge deal coming out of high school.
Yeah. So I watched him and I instantly were like, oh man, this dude is fun.
Mm-hmm.
Like I want to watch more Spencer Rattler. I want like you look at him and you think if Carr is out 6 weeks, there might not be a position for him when he gets back. Rattler sure. could, in fact, find. But I also want to look at him and be fair to Bo Nix and be fair to Caleb Williams and be fair to all these other quarterbacks, again, Daniels, that have been thrust into playing early and just getting to sit and watch for 5 or 6 weeks. Even last week when Carr got hurt, to not rush him into the game mm-hmm. and throw him in there unprepared and shake his confidence.
Sure.
What that did for him, and letting him start this week, all of a sudden he just looks like, hey, look, he's a regular everyday quarterback that can go out there and make the throws. Mm-hmm. And there's such a huge advantage to that. Just even, you know, again, Brock Purdy doesn't really play like the first 9 weeks of the season.
Yeah.
And then he ends up finishing the season and takes him all the way to the NFC Championship game.
Yeah.
So I wish that more teams gave some of these young quarterbacks, afforded them the opportunity to watch the game and to learn and to not be rushed into having to be a savior.
Yeah, I think there's something to that for sure. But at the same time, I also understand that part of the appeal of a rookie quarterback is the rookie contract.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to maximize the years you get out of that rookie contract and the snaps you get out of that rookie contract. And I also think there's a tough balance here because you can say, yeah, sit that guy for 5 weeks. In Spencer Rattler and Drake May's case.
Mm-hmm.
Sit that guy for 5 weeks and then put him in. But at the same time, I also understand why with Caleb Williams or Jaden Daniels, you're going, this is a top two guy. We feel really strongly about where he is as a player and where he's going. This person needs on-field in-game reps.
Yeah.
And it's about, can you get them those in-game reps without, like you said with Spencer Rattler, damaging their confidence.
Yeah.
And I think that was a great move by the Saints, not making him necessarily a backup and making sure that if he's going to start, he has a full week to prepare. You're the starter, you're QB1, prepare like it. And then you go out and you see he's mobile, got really good arm talent. So I think there's value in sitting, but I also don't think that necessarily that just guarantees that a guy's going to be able to come in and be awesome.
I also think, to this point, I think expanding the season to 17 games and then the bye weeks, so it's an 18-game mm-hmm. season, it does let you like put a young quarterback in week one. And if he makes some mistakes that cost you in week one, two, three, four,
mm-hmm.
you can still recover. You can still have a reasonable season. If he can get you one or two wins mm-hmm. out of the first four games, you're not out of it. And it sort of just, it lets you do that on-field training. But on top of that, it gives you enough time to keep building on what you're trying to do.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
Can we talk about this Cowboys game real quick?
Okay.
The Lions beat the Cowboys 47-9. The largest home defeat in the Jerry Jones era.
Mm-hmm.
In the Jera era. The Lions scored 40 points in back-to-back games for the first time since 1962.
Mm.
Which is pretty remarkable. My favorite thing when you go back and look at this game, the Cowboys kicked three field goals. They kicked a field goal to go ahead 3-0. The Lions then ripped off 27 consecutive points. The Cowboys, on their final drive of the first half, kick a field goal to make it 27-6. The Lions then in the third quarter make it 34-6. The Cowboys in the third quarter, a little less than midway through the third quarter, trailing 34-6, opt to kick a field goal to make it 34-9.
You got to get the points on the board, Kyle.
I don't understand. I don't quite get why coaches do that. I'm sure there's something about it where you're going, well, 34-9, and that way by kicking the field goal, we're not giving them field position, and maybe we can keep it from getting super out of hand. But, dude.
I don't know, man.
You got it. How is Mike McCarthy not being relieved of his duties?
They asked Jerry Jones, and he said, no. Like, I haven't considered it. You're like, why not then?
On Jerry's 82nd birthday, I believe it was, by the way, this happened.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, congrats. Congrats, Jerry, you did it.
Steamrolled.
It was just really clear that last year, after they got blown out by the Packers at home in the playoffs, dude, Mike McCarthy's not it.
No.
And then they stick with him, and they're now 3-3, and they're getting blown out 47-9 at home by the Detroit Lions. In a game that was somehow less competitive than a 38-point difference.
Oh, no, that was... well, not only that, but you see it falling apart. That's the problem.
Yes.
Like, to lose a game like that is one thing, but to see CeeDee Lamb be so incredibly angry at Dak Prescott, and just, like, the respect level between the two, you can see it, like, disintegrating.
Yeah.
And that's, again, if... The problem that you have is when a coach loses a locker room, this is what can happen.
Yep.
That you start seeing player relationships disintegrate because a coach doesn't have a command of what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the Cowboys are heading, and it's what they've done to this franchise by sticking with a coach that's not good enough.
Mm-hmm.
He's just not. And you know what? Neither was Jason Garrett.
Stuck with him for too long.
Yeah, well, for like 3 years too long. Like at some point, you really have to question, like, Jerry Jones, why are you still making these decisions? And it's just not okay. So,
the Cowboys are like the most valuable franchise in sports, right?
Yeah,
they are the cream of the crop in terms of franchise valuations.
Yep,
they spend the least money. They do not spend money like they have it. And maybe that's why Jerry and Stephen Jones continue to do their thing, because they're going, hey, as long as we're making money hand over fist, like, the winning is secondary.
Where's the pride, though, Kyle?
I don't know.
That's what it is. Like, you lack pride. Like, if you're going to run out there and claim that you're America's team and you got a big star on your helmet... Like, you're not the stars of the NFL. And to go out there and, you know, like it's even sad what they bring back, like, a broke down Ezekiel Elliott. And, like, they were right to waive him a couple of years earlier. And to bring him back, and you're watching, you're like, what are you doing? Like, every single, like, I get it. They lost two great defensive players in 1 week. I get it. That's tough. But other teams lose players, too. And they keep playing. And you know what they did? A lot of these teams, look at what the Lions are doing versus the Lions keep paying everybody, right? So we saw this week Montgomery got an extension, but they just keep like, okay, we got a contract coming. Let's just take care of it. Let's get out in front of it so it's not an issue. Yeah. They keep taking care of their guys. And then you have the Cowboys who wait and wait and wait, did a lot of what the 49ers did. Mm-hmm. And there's a reason why you got off to a bad start. And a bad start can either turn into a horrendous season,
mm-hmm.
or it can be like, hey, it's a bad start and we got to shake through, you know, but we're still in it and we can figure this out, which is where I kind of feel like the Niners are. The Cowboys, you're like, oh no, this could be one of those bad starts that leads to a 5-12 season or something.
Yeah.
It's just horrible.
Yeah, they're not in a good space right now. The 49ers play the Cowboys in a couple of weeks, but... The other key storyline coming out of the Lions-Cowboys game as it pertains to the 49ers is Aiden Hutchinson broke both bones in his legs, his tibia and fibula.
Yep.
He had surgery to repair both of those. And Adam Schefter reported that's typically a 6 to 8 month recovery, which means he's done for the season.
Mm-hmm.
And if you saw the play, not a surprise.
No.
One of those replays that they showed it once and then Fox went, oh, nope, not doing that again.
Yeah.
CeeDee Lamb was like in tears. It was one of those.
Yeah.
I
think everyone respects who he is and what he brings.
Yeah, he's a beast.
He is absolutely incredible. Awesome. And so for everyone to see him get injured like that and
really tough.
What a freak play. Like basically his leg whipped and hit his teammate's leg.
Yeah.
And just shattered everything. It was like, oh no. It like right away you were like, oh.
Really ugly. Really ugly. So yeah. He had surgery. I believe ESPN reported that the surgery was successful. Mm-hmm. He immediately went to the hospital, got surgery last night. So hopefully he's back next season and better than ever. Sending all our thoughts to Aiden Hutchinson. But the Lions, you mentioned kind of the vibes with them. They have ridden this Dan Campbell vibe. From remember 2 years ago when they beat the Packers in Lambeau, they had no shot at the playoffs, but they started that season, I think it was 1-6, and then ripped off a great run to close the year.
Yep.
And you went, oh, hey, the Lions might be about it. This Dan Campbell thing might work. And then they go and they go to the NFC title game last year. They pay all their dudes immediately. They pay Jared Goff. They didn't wait around with Jared Goff.
Mm-hmm.
Is Jared Goff worth the massive contract he got in a vacuum? Like, no, probably not. But is he to the Lions? Like, yes, definitely. And not having that contract situation hanging over their heads? For sure. David Montgomery has been awesome for them.
Awesome.
Outstanding player.
Yes.
Gets rewarded. Hey, here's a 2-year extension for the running back. Let's make sure you're going to stay here. Amon-Ra St. Brown, bunch of dudes are getting paid. Guess what? Here's your contract. We're going to set the market for you. Here you go. Penei Sewell, we're not going to mess around. Here's a massive contract for you, top of the market. And you keep that vibe. And now, to me, like they have built a culture and a foundation that Aiden Hutchinson going out for them is devastating. And like I said, hopefully he has his surgery, fully recovers, and he's back to being a defensive player of the year candidate next year. That's the hope.
Mm-hmm.
But I saw some people going, man, Lions Super Bowl run over. Watch out. Nope. Tough for the Lions.
Mm.
And to me, it's a brutal loss. Devastating.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I feel like the Lions are a team that has built such a culture that the quote-unquote next man up mentality is just going to be there. And everybody now is going to want to go be better for Aiden. Like, that's going to be the mantra. So that injury is obviously terrible. But to me, I am in no way writing off the Lions.
Oh, no, I'm not riding off the Lions.
They just look. You talk about teams hitting their stride yesterday. I said that with Green Bay.
Yep.
The Lions the last couple of weeks look like a team that after sputtering a little bit at the start, like, okay, here we are.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know how you stop their offense.
They're going to be, we haven't even seen their offense, hit its stride fully.
Yeah.
Not at all. I mean, they have so much more to give. I mean, Gibbs, Amon-Ra St. Brown.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
Yeah, Laporta, they aren't even firing on all cylinders. And then you watch, I was watching late, and Tim Patrick made caught a touchdown.
He did not.
Oh, no.
He did not go for a touchdown. He did, but he got called back.
Yeah, that's right. And I'm like, oh, I forgot he was there. Mm-hmm. And then it's kind of the same thing with the Eagles. When the Eagles start rolling, you're like, oh, man, look at all the receivers they have.
Yeah.
Like, every time you turn around, you're like, oh, I forgot that guy was there. Yeah, the Lions have built something, and shout out Dan Campbell for creating a culture of winning, and it's just rare. It's rare in the NFL that you see somebody be able to change something so dramatically. Which the biggest thing, I'm so excited for Thanksgiving this year because the Lions are always on Thanksgiving,
yeah,
and they're always bad. They're not bad. It used to be like, oh, I can't wait to watch Barry Sanders play on Sunday. I mean, on Thursday for Thanksgiving. But not really care because I know the Lions are going to get trashed. Now it's like, oh, this is going to be fun.
Who do the Lions have on Thanksgiving? Oh, the Colts. No, that's not right. The Bears. Oh.
Yeah.
We have Lions-Bears on Thanksgiving?
Yeah, see, that's what I'm talking about right there.
Oh, dog.
Yeah.
Yes. That's going to be incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah, Lions still good. Aiden Hutchinson injury. Goodness gracious, we'll fix that in post. Obviously devastating, but I think the Lions are still in a good spot to win a lot of games and contend for the NFC. Commanders and Ravens. The Commanders lost 30-23. I think they're legit. I don't think this is a 4-2 start where they're going to finish 9-8.
No.
I think they're good, man.
This feels like an 11-6 team at a minimum. Man. Yeah, they really have found something.
Mm-hmm.
And watching Terry McLaurin like go through so many years of bad there and just like crazy quarterback play and mm-hmm. just one thing after another, and then to have him start off slow in week one, week two, and then Daniels just finds him and mm-hmm. realizes what he has. It's been really cool to watch because man, that connection is crazy good.
Yeah. Yeah, Zach Ertz, 4-68 yesterday. Noah Brown, 4-58. Terry McLaurin, you mentioned, 6 catches, 53 yards, 2 touchdowns. Like, you see them figuring it out. And I think a game like yesterday could potentially make Washington really dangerous down the stretch.
Mm-hmm.
Because Baltimore's experience, they've been there. Lamar Jackson playing like an MVP once again. Every single time the Ravens scored, there was a response from Washington.
Yeah.
Where the Ravens go up 10-3. Derrick Henry plows in from 3 yards out for a touchdown. Then it goes Terry McLaurin touchdown, 10-10. Mark Andrews touchdown, 17-10. They get a field goal. Justin Tucker field goal makes it 20-13. Derrick Henry scores another touchdown, makes it 27-13. And this right here, this portion of the game is why I was so impressed with Washington, because Derrick Henry scores his second touchdown of the day, and you're going, all right, 27-13, nearing the end of the third quarter, this might be blowout time. This might be Washington has to go one-dimensional, mm-hmm. the Ravens do a bunch of stuff schematically, the message with Jaden Daniels, and they wind up winning this game, 34-13 or 41-13, something crazy like that. Nope. Responded with a touchdown. 27-19. They make it, 27-20.
Yeah.
Another field goal makes it 30-20. Going, okay, going to lose. But nope. Come right back down, another field goal. Make it 30-23. And they gave themselves a shot in that game where I thought they were not going to have one. And that they continued to battle and they continued to kind of like scratch and claw. And stay in that game. I'm in on the Commanders, man. I'm all the way in on them winning the NFC East.
They're growing up. That's what you're watching.
You're
watching a team grow up like right there in front of you. Or you're like, oh, it's not this week, but man, you're going to be really good. And just huge shout out. Derrick Henry has been, man, how do you like keep going? I mean, like it looked like he was done. And then all of a sudden he is incredible. He has 700 yards rushing. He's already at like 9 total touchdowns.
Yeah.
He's just absolutely incredible.
It turns out he didn't look great in Tennessee because the Titans stink.
Oh, they're horrible.
And not because of him. Real quick, last thing on this game. You mentioned Derrick Henry's stats and how awesome he looks. Derrick Henry, who left the Titans this year, has 704 rushing yards so far. Will Levis, the Titans quarterback, has 699 passing yards. Has more rushing yards than Will Levis has passing yards.
That's awesome.
All right, we'll keep talking Kings. We've got a couple of more things from the NFL this week to dive into on the Insiders. We're sponsored by Jiffy Lube. That's James Hamm and Kyle Madsen. Back in a second here on ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Center.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
For the past 3 seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a 4th season, but this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.